This is a pre-recorded version of the WTKA Roundtable on WTKA, unsurprisingly, 9 o'clock Thursdays. It is pre-recorded, however, so if you call in, no one will answer.
As they do every single week, talking all things Michigan athletics from MGO Blog, the MGO Blog Roundtable with Brian Cook, Seth Fisher, and Craig Ross. Fellas, good morning. How are you?
Morning. Morning.
Recovering.
Right? Recovering. Right. Yeah. Still sticking in the craw that Michigan lost to that team. You know, lost to UCLA. Take nothing away from the gritty effort that they put forth. They dictated the tempo in that game. And they had a player who really was the best player on the floor. And ultimately, if there's a difference, I would say Ju Zhang was the difference. But boy, you can't help but feel like Michigan, 9 times out of 10, 8 at least out of 10, Michigan beats that team. This was, one or two of those 10 times where UCLA won. So let's dive right into that and get you guys' takes on what happened and why. Starting with you, Brian, the 51-49 loss to UCLA. What did you see?
Well, I mean, you go back and you look at the Bart Torvik box score, which tells you like rim stuff and mid-range stuff, and they were 6-9 at the rim. Michigan was 13-25. And at any point where you're almost tripling up the opposition in shots at the rim, you're probably going to win the game. And you didn't. So to me, it just kind of feels like, you know, you have that sequence where Mike Smith and Hunter Dickinson miss 5 straight free throws. You have Franz Wagner going 1-10 from the floor. You have the rim numbers. You have Ju Zhang hitting everything he puts up. And it's just like, yep, one of those games that happened to happen in the Elite Eight. But I don't know if there were some problems that Michigan had. They turned the ball over too much. They had, you know, a couple of defensive breakdowns. But as you said, overall, you're going to win 8 or 9 of these games against a team that plays like that, and this was just the other one.
Yeah, I stayed up late, really late, watched the whole game again in slow motion, which takes quite a bit of time. And in the end, it came out to and trying to see something. And what I saw was pretty simple. Michigan just missed shots. I mean, they did force some shots, a few. They were impatient at times, I felt. But by and large, it came down to one thing. Michigan just missed shots and missed a lot of good shots. I mean, there are some other things in the game, but it's a pretty much that. I mean, Michigan played good defense. They held UCLA to 51 points. And they had, but UCLA had 2 guys who scored more than 4. And that was it. And so you had their point guard, I think, had 11 and Ju Zhang had 28. So that's 39 of 51 points outside of that. And as you watch the Michigan defensive effort on the tape, you'll see it's quite good and not really a whole lot of mistakes. UCLA did a very clever thing that I didn't notice the first time around. You have to give them credit for it. It wasn't legal, but I didn't notice it. So I can hardly blame anyone else for not noticing it. They ran this double screen on the baseline for Ju Zhang. They ran him from one side of the court to the other, and both double screens are egregious moving screens. But it got him open in the corner and down the stretch a couple times, and he made those shots. But I can't imagine that, you know, it was clever. It was cleverly done, and so hard game to lose. I mean, the big picture for me is Michigan was picked by most everyone, probably including us, I don't remember, at some place between 4th and 9th in the conference. And after the Oakland game, it's hard to think, it was hard to think that this team was really going to accomplish what it was going to accomplish. I mean, I think we went into overtime after maybe a 10-point deficit relatively late to Oakland. And it didn't look like this was a team that was going to go anywhere. And yet, by the Ohio State game, the first Ohio State game, this looked like, man, this team was good. And by the end of the season, they're 23-5, and all five games come when they have a starter out. I don't think they lost a game this year when they had both, when they had every starter healthy. And
that Michigan State game, I think everybody was available for.
Maybe Michigan State. Yeah. Okay, so maybe they had one game, but so it was a great season.
Is that the one where Eli went out for most of the game?
Oh, right, yeah. Forgot about that. Yeah. Never mind.
Yeah. I mean, so really, it was a team. When you kept looking at it, you kept saying, "How are they doing it?" Well, they did it because they ended up being the number four defensive team in the country, and they didn't start out as anything near that. And they finished as the number nine offensive team in the country. And this isn't a team that's loaded with obvious NBA stars, although certainly Franz will be a top 15 pick and should be. And maybe Isaiah and Sean Neal wander into the NBA. It seems plausible. But they don't have a Johnny Juzang on this team, that's for sure. And so to me, it was a great season. I'm mystified by apparently people criticizing individual players on whatever these media, social media are, is mystifying to me, because team played with great effort, great heart. They were fun to watch. It was just a great basketball season from my point of view.
So, Sam, we have it's Passover right now, and we have a song during Passover. This is like the Jewish version of Easter. We've got a Passover song called Dayenu, which means it would have been sufficient, right? We go over this whole long list of things that, like, you know, happened to happen for the Jews to get out of Egypt, and like, you know, if we just done this, if God just given us this much, it would have been sufficient. And that's kind of this game. Like, you know, if Franz Wagner shoots 25% from three, Dayenu, it would have been sufficient, right? If any of his sweeping layups goes in, Dayenu. If Eli Brooks scores a single point on three times he's left all alone under the rim, Dayenu. It would have been sufficient. Nope. So, Dayenu.
Listen,
it is the holiday of our affliction, Sam.
Yeah, there was
that's football season.
There was a talk early in the season that really didn't ring true for much of it, but I thought rang true at the end. For the entirety of the season, Michigan was the sum of its parts. And in the end, you know, I feel like they needed a guy. They needed a guy that could do what Juzang did in a defensive slugfest, that could just carry him for stretches. And on a team where that hat was shared, where it was a different guy on a different night, you saw, I think, the impact of not having that one guy in this contest. Everyone thought it could be Franz, or it should be Franz. And in fairness to him, his game may just not be to that point where he can do that. I mean, clearly it was an off game for him. He clearly wasn't shooting with confidence in this contest as much as he was willing to take those shots. They just weren't falling. And maybe he'll develop that in time. But this was an example where not having that guy established, because ideally with the way that game was playing, maybe it's Sean D. Brown who you give the ball to in that situation. But they aren't running ball screens for Sean D. Brown all season, right? They aren't saying, go make a play.
Yeah. And
they didn't do it in this instance. Franz had been that guy that if you're going to have one, it was going to be him, and he just wasn't to that level. Not at least not at this point in his career.
Well, I kind of feel in the second half they were dumping the ball down to Dickinson pretty much every possession, and he is that guy for Michigan. And sort of one of the stories of Michigan's kind of slight decline towards the end of the season is the scouting report got out on Hunter, and it's like, all right, well, he wants to go over his right shoulder, and so you're going to sit on that right shoulder. And his shots got notably tougher as the season progressed, and I feel like one of the keys for this offseason is Hunter getting in the gym with Juwan Howard and developing some counter moves to that, and maybe getting back to the point where he's shooting 65% from the floor in Big Ten play. So, yeah, I mean, Juzang was the story of this game, but also UCLA only scored 51 points. Mm-hmm. So all those mid-range jumpers didn't actually add up to an efficient offense. They did not.
But I guess to me, outside of him carrying the team, I mean, for a long stretch in the first half, he gets his ankle injury. Michigan does a better job on him defensively in the second half. They start attacking him. Eli Brooks got to give him credit, making him play some defense. But down the stretch, and Craig pointed out a couple of sequences. Look, you need a bucket. Do we have a guy we can give it to that can get us a bucket? And, you know, Craig, you pointed out a couple of occasions. The shot that sticks out to me was that baseline shot over Hunter. You know, Michigan, what did they finish the last 5+ minutes without a field goal?
Those shots were all at the rim. Like, yeah. I mean, yeah, they got the shots. They just didn't go down. Like, everything was at the rim. And they, like, it seemed like every possession I thought, okay, here we go. We're going to tie this game. And then it just missed.
The only bad shot they took in the winning minutes was Mike Smith's three, which actually went down.
Well, I mean, there was also Eli getting that offensive rebound and immediately kind of chucking it up behind his head, which is, he did that twice in this game. Yes. So, and like,
yeah, the first one was like, it tried to be like an alley-oop.
I don't know what the deal is with that, but like, yeah, he needed to gather himself and see what the situation is and maybe pump fake and go up with it. But, you know, I felt like, you know, if it was a situation where Michigan was getting stuck in taking some really tough shots, fadeaways off the dribble, that kind of thing, I would agree with that more. But to me, I feel like if everybody's getting to the rim and everybody's missing, that's just not your night.
Yeah, it reminds me, though, of Leonard Hamilton after their game with Michigan. He said, you know, they missed a bunch of layups. And he said, you know, the way that Michigan played us defensively sped us up at the rim. So it wasn't – guys just weren't just, you know, missing shots they normally make, you know, for no reason. It's, you know, we feel like the defense that Michigan played against us sped us up. And maybe we took improper angles. Maybe we rushed those shots, and it affected the execution. And I started to think the same thing about Michigan. Yeah. And, you know, they felt sped up and rushed and poor angles around the rim, and that lending itself to so many missed layups. I mean, it was too many of them to me for it just to be like, this is just pure chance, the randomness of basketball, where this is one game where guys are going to miss a bunch of layups. Like, you know, maybe UCLA had something to do with that. And to have a player, to have a guy that can transcend that kind of defensive showing from the opposition, they just didn't have that in this particular instance. I mean, I tip my cap to the other team, and maybe those other eight games, you know, the free throws, maybe they don't have those empty trips to the free throw line. I'll attribute that to randomness, Ryan. Because Michigan's a good free throw shooting team, and here they are, you know, going empty trips to the free throw line like they did.
Yeah. I mean, Craig's the one who watched it in slow motion. So what do you think that?
I mean, I think it's plausible. You know, Leonard Hamilton is such a man that it's just hard to know if he really believed that or that's just the way he is. I mean, I watched that Leonard Hamilton presser, and I thought, you know, about 20 coaches in the country need to watch this dude and see how he handles himself, because it was really impressive. I mean, he's an impressive human being. And I thought, man, I'd want to play for that guy. And at the end of it. And so I don't know if he was just being gracious or if it was really true. Now, I tend to think there was some truth to it, Sam, and I tend to agree with you too. As I watched it, I felt like Michigan was a little spooked around the basket. They didn't quite, they lost a certain comfort level. I can't say enough about how good I thought the coaching was this year on the entire staff. But, and this has nothing to do with coaching, I think, but there were times in the second half where Michigan just didn't make the extra pass. And, you know, at 4:30 to go in the game, I think it was when Shondy hit his three. And then they pulled Shondy for the next 2 minutes. And, you know, I think I would have left him in because he's the only person who seemed comfortable shooting the ball. And so he makes his three. They pull him out for the next 2 minutes, 10 seconds or so. and they don't score. And then he comes back in the game, and there's a point where, as Brian says, they were dumping to Hunter routinely. They dump it down to Hunter, and he's got Shondy wide. I mean, they double down on Hunter, and he's got Shondy wide open.
I remember that one.
You remember this? Just standing there, and Shondy's got his hands out saying, give me the damn ball. And Hunter just doesn't see him, and he forces a bad shot. And so a lot of this is just on UCLA. I think UCLA, whatever they did, they played hard. Give them credit. I mean, they deserve their win. I mean, give them credit. They played hard, and I think they completely had Michigan on their heels in this game. And so some of it might have been around the rim that Michigan just was freaked out by, you know, by the competition they were seeing. I don't know.
You're a greater sport than I am, Craig. I don't think UCLA scored 51 points, and the shot quality that they got, they weren't going to get a single point more than that. Like they maxed
you're right
out
about
what they
that.
Could get. And you hold any team in basketball to 51 points, and you're getting to the rim 25 times. Like you should win that game.
Yeah, you know, again, the chance of it was, I mean, part of this Michigan their comeback coincided with Johnny Juzang going out, so you know, if Johnny Juzang doesn't have that ankle injury where he where it clearly slowed him down some. Now Michigan's defense had something to do with that, but you know, do they relinquish that lead? You know, does with the way Michigan was playing offensively, would they have mounted the same kind of comeback? I don't know the answer to that question. I just feel like in this contest, if we are going to certainly look at the shot quality that they got and say, hey, not an issue with, you know, the offense and how it created those opportunities, I do think we need to focus on who it created the opportunities for. And at some point, like you said, they were dumping it down to Hunter. And this was the game where they had him. So you could hear them yelling. I wonder if you noticed this on the tape. I noticed during the game, you could hear him saying, right shoulder, right shoulder, right shoulder.
Baseline.
I mean, they were calling it out. And so at that point, where they have him so well diagnosed, it just felt like this was one of those contests where who are you going to try to emphasize now? And, you know, again, Franz wound up being a guy, but I agree with you, Craig. I feel like Shondy Brown down the stretch, based on the way game flow was, he should have been the guy that got more opportunities down the stretch. Yeah. But because he hadn't been that guy, I mean, he hadn't been a guy that you run your look, you initiate our offense, send you off a ball screen and create for yourself or someone else. They hadn't done that with Shondy all season.
No.
And so that's why in this situation, they didn't do it now.
Well, I mean, I think one thing that I do agree with is that Shondy Brown is the most contest immune 3-point shooter Michigan has.
That's true.
So he's 6'5". His jumper comes out at a high angle and he has no hesitation when he's going up with a shot. So that Hunter possession that Craig referenced was extremely painful because I was just like, get it to Shondy. He's hit a couple. He's so hot in the tournament. Yeah. And like, yeah, the 6'6" guy can close him out, but it doesn't matter to Brown. So yeah, I mean, I don't know if they should have been running stuff through him more, but they should have been looking at him as an option to take perimeter shots more often. But, you know, whenever you have a game like this and your best players who shoot really well from two aren't doing it, you know, you look back at it and you're like, okay, this should have happened and this should have happened and this should have happened. But also sometimes you got to dance with who brung you, right? So the critiques of what went wrong in this game, I think, are a little bit beside the point, because like, what did Michigan do to Florida State when they had a week to prep? What did they do to LSU in that second half? What did they do to the Big Ten over the course of that season? And I think one of the takeaways going forward for this team is, not only does Juwan Howard have the best recruiting class in America coming in this year, he's the National Coach of the Year. And when they got the roll out the ball guys, they stuffed him in a trash can. So, you know, you feel like this is a combination of like, yeah, Juwan Howard is on John Beilein's level solely as a basketball coach. And he has Musa Diabate coming in. And he has Caleb Houston coming in. Kobe Bufkin. This is going to be a program.
Point guard next year is Frankie Collins.
Frankie Collins, who I love.
Me too.
I love Frankie Collins.
Me too.
That guy, you know, Michigan had this incredible tradition of
point guards with lip curl under John Beilein, and Frankie Collins has more lip curl than anyone I've seen since Trey Burke.
Yeah,
that guy is a stone cold winner.
Yeah, I think he's your starting point guard next year. I think if he has an Eli Brooks next to him, and this gets to a question I want you guys to ponder as we head into this break. Let's say you had to choose one. And I know that's not the real choice. Like, if all these guys wanted to come back, you know, conceivably Michigan could do it. They certainly have the money to pay for those scholarships. But if you had to choose one, who would you choose? Of the four seniors that could take advantage of a COVID shirt, which would Michigan benefit the most from? Ponder that one as we head into a break. And I think that Michigan, even if they do get one of those guys back, I still think that they would be in the portal looking just to try to get some more experienced help in that backcourt. So it'll be interesting to see how that unfolds. We'll get more into that on the other side and sort of project, start to see what the future holds for Michigan basketball. Let's see what freshmen you think are going to be immediate impact guys. Who will be in the starting lineup? What roles do you think they'll play as freshmen? We'll start to break all that down on the other side here. MGo Blog Roundtable on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTK The Tick.
You know, there's a play also. You know, there's a play when Juwan called timeout on the 25 footer that he left 6 feet short, that Franz left short. That play, Hunter sets a great screen, and Franz hesitates slightly, and if he drives the ball, then he's going to get Shondy's guy coming right at him, and he's going to have Shondy standing wide open.
That couldn't have been part of the game plan for him to shoot.
The plan had to have been Franz to take it to the basket.
It's a pick and roll, and they go so far under it,
right,
that they're daring him to shoot. And right. Like, the only problem I have is I think UCLA is up one at that point.
They were.
So like, two versus three is like, it's not a great idea to take a three instead of getting to the rim. But
the theory had to be that he would get to the rim there, and that had to be the theory.
That was UCLA's theory too. That's why they backed off.
Right,
but I guess to Craig's point, I'm telling him attack anyway. And as you get into the lane, either you're going to have a one-on-one opportunity. You're 6'9". You know, maybe you get a hook over that guy, but you know, force the ref to make a call. You still got a chance to foul, which they actually did. You still got a chance to foul if you missed the shot. But ideally, you get in the lane and the defense collapses, and you'll kick out.
You either kick it or tank it. And after all, Bo Borowski's calling the game. We're going to see him.
That missed hook and hold. God damn it.
But Bo Borowski's calling the game. And there ain't no way he's going to want to look at Juwan next year on any play around the basket with contact. And, I think, you know, there's a good chance you'll either get the call, he'll make the shot, or worst case, you kick it out to a wide open Shondy because the guy's going to have to collapse off him.
I love Franz, but that, you know, situation. Yes.
I love Franz too.
And you make a great point, Brian. I'm not disputing your point. They go under the screen. That's a good look, but it's not a good look for Franz in this game.
It's not a good look when you're up one in that kind of time situation.
Right. Like, and you're shooting as poorly as he shot.
That's a good look for about two people in the world.
Are you? It's a wide open three pointer.
I wouldn't go that far. But, you know, that he shot an air ball there is not a surprise based on how he had been shooting in that game.
Yeah, he didn't have a good shooting game,
but
the play was a good play.
He got the space and he put it up really quickly. And, like, you can tell when Franz is sped up.
We got to move on. He's short. We're just dwelling.
Yeah.
Dwelling.
It is a painful memory.
I mean, if this game happens any other time in the season, we're just like, burn the tape, just bad luck, whatever. End of it's because it happened in single elimination basketball against.
Back in 1 minute, guys. Back in 1 minute.
That fucking team, they are better than Michigan. That's the part that makes you're better than Michigan.
I mean, like I said, there was a gazillion things that could have happened, and any one of them happening, Michigan wins that game. There was nothing more
dwelling. Accept it. Accept what happened.
All equanimity. Right.
You convinced me, man. I've accepted it. I'm not going to let it tape anymore.
I was, now I'm talking like my hair is in charge.
Let's go back to our Socrates.
But you are spot on. I mean, you can't come away from this season anything but extremely excited and encouraged that you're going to have a coaching advantage in most games Michigan is in. I mean, he has established himself as a coach who makes outstanding. They do a great job scouting. Outstanding in-game adjustments. Tactically, he won't be in
back in about 10 seconds, guys.
He just gets out-coached like he out-coached coaches in this tournament or in this season.
Yeah, no. Michigan is basketball.
All right, guys, coming back on radio. Stand by for radio in 5, 4, 3.
We are back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA online at WTK.com. MGO Blog Roundtable. So I gave you guys a little homework. Heading into the break, you got one choice from the seniors who could take a COVID shirt. Seth Fisher, if you had to choose one, which one would you choose and why?
Oh, I didn't think I was going to go first. I was going to go against the grain with Isaiah Livers.
That would be my choice, too. So okay. Against the grain that is.
I mean, he gives you everything, right? So
I guess I didn't even include him because I just there's
yeah. right. Like, yeah. That's not realistic, right? So
yeah, I mean, who's number two? It's probably Eli for similar reasons, right? He helps bring everything together. He's always in the right place. He's not the most athletic. Like he's not gonna be. He's hit his upside already, but Eli can bring you so many things. He's already been a senior leader. He's already, run the team before. And we've seen Michigan without Eli on the court and the difference. So, I mean, between, Mike Smith, he brings a lot of things. But I think that you got a guy in Frankie who can play that position next year. And, Sean D, he seems ready to move on. And we're going to have a lot of young guys who can shoot and come off the bench. So, yeah.
Go ahead. Sorry. No, I mean, I'm happy if they can get any of them back.
I'm right here with you.
I mean, I don't know much
radio question, Greg. This is a radio question. I'm putting you on the spot.
And so do I think Isaiah's coming back? No, not a chance in 100. If Franz can come back, yeah. I thought Franz was our best player this year. I think Franz is a tremendous defender, can defend almost anybody, and I think he's a good, excellent rebounder, a phenomenal passer. He is 6'10". They call him 6'9". Franz insists he's 6'10", and I think he is. I mean, he's a 6'10" guy who's long, who can pass, can handle the ball.
That's not even the question.
Okay. So
he's got eligibility.
Yeah, he's got eligibility. So, I mean, okay, you're right. He's not a senior. But, I guess I'm with Eli. Because even though I'm with you guys, I mean, I love Frankie Collins. I watched his game. I watched him dunk over Chet, and I liked that a whole lot.
He tried to dunk.
He didn't actually complete it.
It was just the gall to give it a shot.
Yeah.
I love Frankie Collins' game, but he's a freshman. And freshman point guard never become – even Trey Burke wasn't a superstar as a freshman. He was good. But Frankie has one big hole in his game, aside from learning the system, and that is he's not a great shooter. And so I would like to see Eli back and would allow them, Eli could be the grease in the system to make sure that we did have point guard play that worked, because I think Eli can play the point okay. So it's
Eli's your pick.
Probably Eli, although Mike Smith would be great. But what I've heard is Mike Smith has a great job somewhere. So I don't know if that's
Eli's your pick.
Eli's my pick.
So yeah. Two Eli's. Who are you going with, Brian Cook?
I think it depends. I might go with Mike Smith just because, as mentioned, a freshman point guard as your starter is often a situation where that guy can get in his head, have some bad games, and then you would really want to have a veteran hand who can just kind of come in there and move the offense. And I think that Mike Smith has more impact in that realm than Eli does. Now, Eli's his on-off splits on defense are frankly incredible for a guy who's not like a flashy Franz-like defender. But you know, I think they're going to have plenty of size. And the thing that might kind of bother me a little bit is like, okay, can the point guard get in the lane and make something happen? And I think Mike Smith is a better bet, especially because hypothetical next year, Mike Smith might be more like the Mike Smith we saw in the back half of the season, who about halved his turnover rate, right? So like, as he got used to the Big Ten, he became more assertive, he became more responsible. And I think, you know, he would have more upside next year than Eli, but they're both good choices. And I also kind of want to say, can I pick Marcus Carr?
Shawnee Brown is the most talented of the bunch for sure, but we aren't talking about talent as much as we are what will the biggest need be. And I think Caleb Houston inserted at that wing spot can give you some. He's going to give you shooting.
Yeah,
I think if you watch Caleb, you talk to his trainers, his coaches, he is a more than willing defender, takes that end of the court very seriously. I think they're going to have some wing options. Young though they may be, they will have a number of guys that can come in and give them some punch there. I like Eli Brooks in this equation because, you know, in Frankie Collins, I think you have a freshman point guard who, while it's not ideal to have a freshman, you know, facilitator, this is a high IQ guy who is physically ready. He's a guy that while he has holes in his shot and teams are going to go underneath screens routinely against him, I think you're going to see, like we saw with X, this guy is so quick. He's so explosive that even, you know, guys going under ball screens, he's still going to be able to get in the lane, you know, pretty consistently. And he can finish in the paint, too. He can finish through contact. He can shoot over people. He's going to need to develop a jump shot. But in the instances where maybe you're feeling he's a little short, you know, he's either in his head, to your point, Brian, you know, they teams are playing and his jumper is just looking X-like in this contest. You can slide Eli Brooks over there, too. He's going to be a floor spacer at the two guard position because he can really shoot it. He's going to play defense. He's going to be that calming presence for your entire team, but specifically for your backcourt. I think that he just checks more boxes than any of the other guys that could come back. That's why I would want him, my opinion.
You know, one thing I say about Brian's choice is that Mike Smith, aside from cutting his turnovers, became a pretty good defender. And he was not a good defender here in the first third of the season, for sure. And he was a defensive liability. But by the end of the season, he was not. He was a good defender. He really made, I mean, Mike deserves a lot of credit for the distance he came in 1 year.
Yeah, I can't wait to see Frankie Collins and Hunter Dickinson in some two-man goals. if you put some shooters around him, I mean, man, that is going to be fun to watch. Now, again, he has a big hole in his game. I don't think he shoots it as poorly as X did as a freshman, right? I think he's better than that, but he has a ways to go for teams to respect it the way that you're going to want him to for Michigan to be an optimal offense.
His shot's not broken. I mean, and X was a set shooter, right? Like X, you needed to have a lot of space for him to line that up, and it took a while for him to even get that to 30%. I don't think that's the same with Frankie Collins. I think he just needs to like work on his release point, and he's
a lot closer.
Yeah.
And he's also much more athletic than X, so they're not going to be able to just kind of play off of him, do drop coverage, and he's got to get the hookup, right? So he's going to be able to explode to the basket and put some people on posters. And you talk about surrounding him with shooters. Well, I think Caleb Houston is a 50% three-point shooter in high school. You know, Brandon Johns I think he's at 36% for his career, and he's going to be out there quite a bit. And then it's just, all right, who's that two guard? Mm-hmm. You know, if it's Eli, then check mark. You know, is Kobe Bufkin ready to play big minutes?
Yeah,
he's pretty scrawny.
It'll be interesting to see how much mass he's able to put on between now and then. I'm really intrigued by Isaiah Barnes, guys. Really intrigued. Let's get into freshmen and freshman impact.
Yeah. Now,
you know, we certainly are looking for Brandon Johns to take his game up a notch, right? Can he improve his game in the way that Eli Brooks did when he became a primary player? Looking to see if Brandon Johns can do that. What do we see from from Terrence Williams and Zeb. I mean, those are all things that we can talk about moving forward, but I'm specifically interested in you guys' take on these freshmen and who you think we are going to see come in and be factors right away.
I think the number one guy who's going to be a big factor is Houston, because you watch his game and he is college ready. Like, I've started watching more high school basketball games because now Michigan is recruiting the kind of guys who get on television. and high school basketball games are full of crap. All of it is crap. All of every shot that Josh Christopher took in high school was a crap shot. And Caleb Houston really stands out as a guy who lets the game come to him. Like, if he's got an open shot, he's a knockdown shooter. He can attack closeouts. He's really long. My only concern is that, you know, if he's playing the three, is he going to be able to, does he have the lateral quickness to defend that spot? But I think he's a plug and play 30 minute per game guy, like with a floor of freshman Zach Ervin.
Yeah, it seems to me possible that if you're playing Giudice and Houston, Musa could check a three. I mean, because he can move his feet, and you could swing Houston over to check a larger player who doesn't move his feet quite as well.
He could check a one. Like, he is one of the very few guys. I watched the game. I went down to the game with Matt from Endless Motor. And, like, he scouts these guys, you know, professionally. And I can't tell you how many hours of the trip to and from Indianapolis we were talking about Giudice.
Yes, Matt is a Giudice stan. I think we can say that.
But, I mean, there's a good reason for it. And it's because, like, you know, you even go with guys that we consider, like, the most switchable centers ever, like Xavier Tillman. He still couldn't, you know, guard a one.
He did pretty well against that.
Giudice is apparently on another level of that, and I think when you talk about, like, how can Michigan take the next step, I think Houston kind of gives you some of the things that you have with Livers, right? He's going to be a good outside shooter, he's going to be a pretty active defender, he's going to give you some length out there on the wing. Giudice, I think, is the spot where you're really improving on with this year's because we had Dickinson, and then, you know, you go to Davis, and Davis can give you some minutes, but Giudice is going to be able to go in there and dominate, and he can play the four as well, and you can do a lot of cool matchups with him.
Yeah, I'm not trying to disrespect Austin Davis in any way whatsoever. He had a great career here, and the ability for him to go to the Horizon League and shoot 800%, he should do it. He should score 40 points a game in the Horizon League next year. But when he was in, opponent's shot, I think about 13 points better on twos, which is a giant, giant gap. Mm-hmm. And Giudice is going to fill that gap. And he may actually be a better defender than Dickinson next year, although Dickinson actually was pretty superb.
I think you're absolutely spot on.
The center situation next year might feel a lot like when we had Mo Wagner and John Teske, where foul trouble is much less of an issue because you have a backup who probably would start for the rest of the league.
Yeah, you I think are not overstating it, Ryan, when you say I think he will be their best big man. You can switch him on a point guard and feel that he's going to be that's taking nothing away from the improvement that we saw from Hunter in that regard, but Hunter made a substantial improvement. He was thought of by scouts to be a defensive liability heading to the college level, and credit to him, credit to Juwan, credit to the coaching staff for really bringing him up to speed. Musa Giudice will come in and be on the defensive end what Austin Davis was on the offensive end this year. You know, Austin Davis is going to come in, he's going to get you a few buckets. He's going to make some plays in the post. Question for me about Musa is, you know, on the offensive end of the floor, will he be a consistent producer in the way that Austin Davis was on that end? What do you guys think about that?
I mean, he's not going to be a consistent producer in the way Austin Davis was, mm-hmm. right? Where you can put it in the post and he's going to get his own bucket. But if he's in the dunker spot, I mean, that's a big margin for error for various alley-oops and all kinds of dump offs, right? So you can get it to him when he's got good position. If say Frankie Collins is able to break the perimeter of the defense and draw help, like, he's a guy who's going to shoot, what, 80% at the rim, 90% at the rim. he's not going to generate shots, but if you're able to get him shots, he's going to be a tremendous finisher.
Mm-hmm. Hey, how about this one, guys? And I've heard this a lot from coaches, even coaches and scouts. But Zeke says Barnes is probably the best in the class as far as upside. I've heard that from a number of scouts.
Well, I mean, he's 6'6", and has a really good outside shot, and that's a really good place to start from.
Yeah, I haven't seen as much of his game as I have some of the others, but I've watched some of the tape, and I keep hearing this from people who have seen him, that his upside is massive. He's certainly a very good athlete. It looks like he shoots the ball pretty well. I don't know why. I mean, he's not lowly rated, but, you know, I'm not sure what the gaps are in his game that pushes him down to around number 100. Is that about where he's at, Sam?
You know, he was a guy who wasn't very consistent.
Okay.
And he started rising in the rankings when it didn't, you know, his motor or his aggressiveness. Motor is the wrong word. When his aggressiveness didn't fluctuate, when he started stringing together games where, hey, he's attacking, he's showing up in the, he didn't disappear. He's showing up in the scoring column game after game because he can put it on the deck. He can shoot it. And I don't know if it was you, Craig, or you, Brian, who said this guy, he is a finisher. This is a class where Frankie Collins, Musa Diabate, and Isaiah Barnes, you talk the finishing level on this team.
Yeah.
Is about to go through the roof with those three guys alone. So Isaiah Barnes brings some more of that to the table. He's the other guy. You know, he's the guy that I think in this mix is going to give them some scoring punch off the bench, which sort of gets into what we were talking about in the lead-in. This gets to a question from Thomas Canfield. He said, any comments, gentlemen, about our sophomore class? So
people who will be sophomores next year.
People who will be right. Sophomores next year. So Zeb Jackson, Terrence Williams, how do you see them fitting in? Zeb is interesting because he was thought to be the heir apparent at the point guard spot. That is still the point guard duties, that role, that lead guard role is still a work in progress for him. Frankie Collins is already more advanced as a lead guard than Zeb. It's why I think he'll be the one. What do you think about Zeb maybe being that third guard? That third guard, do you think that he ascends to that role next year?
Go ahead.
Well, I mean, I've been watching Zeb for a while, back when he was 6'2" and not the 6'5" I think he is now. And he was playing in his junior year, I think, down at near Toledo at a small school, Maumee, and they were playing Ottawa Hills, which is a public school, but really a private school. It's a small school where my brother's kids went to school. So I said, John, it's about two blocks from his house. I said, can you wander over and watch Zeb Jackson play in this game? He says, sure. So he goes over and then reports back to me. I said, what did you see? He goes, I don't know. I said, what do you mean? He said, Ottawa Hills put three guys on him. They put three guys on him. And so it was a ridiculous game. And it didn't make the game made no sense. They just put three guys on him, and so it was a stupid game. And then the kid goes to
Montverde,
where he's behind Cade Cunningham and plays, you know, very limited minutes. And then this year we didn't see much of him. You know, sometimes he looked like a real basketball player, you know, and sometimes he looked like most freshmen, a bit lost. So I don't know. What do you guys think about Zeb? I'm not sure. I think he is 6'5", and he looks – I know he's athletic as hell. I mean, he's a really
Zeb
good athlete.
Zeb feels like he's one more year away to me.
I agree.
And this year is like – coming up is going to be like, all right, can he get 8 minutes off the bench? Mm-hmm. Can he hit some shots? I kind of feel the same way about Terrence Williams. Like, I think Terrence Williams is going to be a really good upperclassman, but the like his role coming into this year is probably going to be along the same lines as it was this year. Cause you're going to have Diabate at the four. You're going to have Houston who can play the four. You're going to have Johns at the four. There's just not going to be a lot of minutes for him at the spot that he should probably be playing. Now, the one thing I think he might have an advantage for is if Michigan, they're going to be starting Brandon Johns. They're going to have Diabate. I think you're going to see a lot of high low. Mm-hmm. And Terrence Williams has a great chemistry with Hunter Dickinson in that high low. Yeah. They were on the same AAU team. His best moments this year were being in the high post and feeding Hunter Dickinson. So I think that's a way he can carve out some minutes for himself.
Yeah. So assuming Eli comes back, I assume that we don't want anyone else in the backcourt. But
well,
is that I mean, regardless of who
you
it
need
is,
a bench guard, and Sean D was our only bench guard this year, and like you need somebody to be able to, you know, switch in there.
Yeah, yeah, I mean, Zeb's a possibility. Bufkin might be able to handle 10 minutes a game. So I would be more comfortable getting someone out of the portal who can, not look to be a starter, but like help out.
Yeah, they're looking for sure. Great conversation, guys. Ira's giving me the signs. He's flashing the sign saying we're out of time. I just got the wrap-up sign. Look at that. Fellas, we next week, maybe we got a few more shows before you guys go on your hiatus, right? We can talk a little spring football, maybe.
Says anything about spring football,
we can talk football. We can talk baseball, softball. So
yeah, I'm right there with you.
There's things we can talk about. I mean,
I know you guys. We go on the summer break, but you know, I keep you guys as long as I can. So
we could take we talk Socrates before the show for 10 or 15 minutes. We can get back to Socrates and the devaluation of the oral traditions of culture at that time, as opposed to and what movies did the theater and
the basketball tournament. Thanks, Craig.
All right, folks, we got to get out of here. Appreciate you as always. Back tomorrow here on the Michigan Hits. I'm getting my vaccine, folks. I'm getting my vaccine. I'm so excited.
Congratulations.
All right, we got to get out of here. See you tomorrow here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket, the official voice of University of Michigan Sports, Ann Arbor, a Cumulus station.
I think of wearing a mask when I come onto this show.
Yeah, I honestly, like, as long as the mask had tape over your mouth, that would be a good idea.
It's too bad that one wasn't on air.
Oh, I got it. It's recorded.